All right, Coach, we passed up. We're deep in the double digits now. Episode 11 of Football 52. I am Brady Hull and UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. We do this every single week. Coach, I don't want to say it's a holiday, but now it's like part of the holidays when you look at certain benchmarks throughout the football season, throughout the college season. This week we entered into the spring transfer portal portion, so now it's something we deeply pay attention to, good or bad.
That's right, and there is good and bad. I was a proponent for the portal from the start. I think it's great for the game. I think it's great for the players. I think it levels out the playing field. Coaches come and go, particularly assistant coaches.
Yeah,
relationships change, roles on a team can change. Guys change positions. I think it's just great that the players have a little more autonomy in their decision making without getting penalized. And Peter Castelli is a great example. Just in the last year, the rules changed so that Peter Castelli would have been eligible under the new current rule of transfer portal eligibility. But he was with us last year and had to sit out a whole year ineligible because it was his second transfer. And that rule that kept him on the bench no longer exists. So really a fan of that. And as you hear me talk about all the time, I tell the players that the portal is your friend. And I really mean that, that these guys need to always consider their options.
Well, and you mean that in a way, too. It can be, hey, the portal's your friend. If you don't want to be here, it's your friend. Get out, you know, go on, find something else. But also in a positive way, too, where it's maybe it's not going to make sense for you here. Maybe you're too far down the depth chart, or your skill set, as we're all kind of learning together, is not going to fit what we're looking for. So go find the best opportunity for you.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. I just this past week in a team meeting. We have a team meeting nearly every day during the spring practice sessions. To begin our kind of like unit meetings, and then we break up into position meetings. But most days we start with a team meeting where I address the team. Some days it's just, you know, if there's not anything to say, I'm not going to make something up. And it's just a quick review of, okay, here's practice. Okay, we're moving on, special teams. And then we break up after that. But just this past week, I was explaining to the players, hey, I want to be clear about something. You guys hear me all the time saying the portal is your friend. And sometimes I use it kind of tongue in cheek, like, hey, if you don't like what I'm saying, portal is your friend, get the heck out. And a lot of times I'm talking about lifestyle, drug use, alcohol, you know, academics, guys that aren't showing up for study hall, et cetera. But I also mean it in a very serious way. It's not my friend as a coach. I'm not looking to kick people out, drive them into the portal. Everything I'm trying to do is to be awesome for those players, encourage them to things that they already want in their life. If they don't want those things, the portal is their friend, because I'm going to keep pushing for that. But then the other real part of this that you're alluding to is just a role, every player's role on a team. And if their role is not something that they're happy with, they truly belong somewhere else. I mean, their belief in their ability to contribute and have a positive experience, that's probably the most important component they can bring, is that belief. And if they don't believe, then yeah, they need to go somewhere where they have another opportunity to believe.
Well, and this is what I was so excited about today's show, Coach, because yesterday, this being on a Wednesday, Tuesday, we're getting all the news. And, you know, for my program, we really follow closely, obviously, the UNC Bears, Wyoming Cowboys, CU Buffs, CSU Rams. One of the names in this transfer portal, as far as notes, was a quarterback on your roster. And I want to get into that in a moment. But these days, I think shows like this are so important because everybody has social media now. So when they see a guy suddenly enter the transfer portal, I think the fans instantly go to, what's going on over there? You know, what's happening over there? And that's just not the case. Some, you know, and again, with everybody, and yeah, sure, there are going to be negative cases where maybe the coach and the player just didn't click, and it's the player's not confident, the coach isn't confident in the player, whatever. But there's also a positive departure going on, too. There's also like, hey, both sides were really good with each other. It just didn't quite make sense for the future. One of those guys on that list, Shay Kuykendall, and I was pressing you last week on the quarterback depth chart, too. And we were talking about what that depth chart looks like. And you talked about Peter Castelli and, of course, Hank Gibbs. And then the other name on that list was Shay Kuykendall. Those three guys, I mean, I honestly, based on our conversation, I'm thinking, okay, any one of those guys has a realistic chance to perhaps be the starting quarterback next year. Talk to us about the process with Shea, and because we know he's a pretty good dude, and he seemed to be a really, as far as attitude, a good fit for your program.
Absolutely, yeah. Shea, you know, I want to be clear that anytime anyone leaves through the portal, even if it's the right decision for them, and even if it becomes somehow a net gain for us, right? Because that would, at that point, that's our job is, okay, yeah. Well, how do we replace this guy? How do we get better as a team? Our job is to make it a net gain, even if all the best players on our team leave. Yet, you know, I'm very honestly, anytime a player leaves, there's heartache in that for me because, you know, I want all 120 players on our roster to be clearly communicated what their role is, and I want them to buy into that role. So even though we may see a guy as third or fourth on the depth chart, he's still on the team for a reason. And we see potential in that guy, or I would have came to that guy a long time ago and said, hey, we don't see potential in you. I don't think you have any ability to contribute here to the team, to a winning effort, and I think you should leave. I have never actually done that, and certainly didn't do that with Shea. So from that perspective, there is some negative feelings when a guy enters the portal because it's a breakup, so to speak. But in Shea's case, absolutely what I told you last week was valid. I'm not on here to hide anything. Like Shea, Hank Gibbs and Peter Castelli were taking the lion's share, the majority of reps. They were getting starting reps with the first unit in every practice, all three of them. And yet, we're always very clear about how we see it stacking up. And the way it was stacking up right now is that Shea was in a competition for the starting job currently in the third position. And Shea brings a lot of the intangibles and a lot of the experience that, with UNC that Peter and Hank don't have. Shea's taken a lot more snaps. He's very confident in himself. He takes care of the football. And I think he really knows how to operate our offense. And we've got a ton of respect for the way Shea approaches the game. But he came to me, and that's always the first indication that we've done things right and we've communicated with guys. He felt obligated to communicate with us. I don't want to reveal all of his thoughts and emotions at that time because it's an emotional meeting. I hate to be in that meeting, but I was super grateful that he came and talked to me one-on-one. And he hated the idea of leaving, but thought that it might be best for him.
Is this, and again, we can answer what we want here, Coach, but is this more of a situation where as the weeks are progressing in spring ball, and as you said, he's competing for the starting job, but it's kind of more or less, he's sitting right in between. He's in that third spot. He's ahead of some of the younger guys, but he's behind some of the guys that you're really looking at as far as sharing a lot of those reps. Is there just a sense from both sides eventually that, hey, this is, I might have a better opportunity to go compete for a starting job elsewhere? And you both kind of get that sense. And then obviously, as you said, you have that conversation a little bit later.
I think in his case, and a lot of quarterbacks think this way because it's not really a rotational position.
Yeah,
you're not likely to get a lot of reps as the second guy unless somebody gets hurt. I think in his case, he was looking for more guarantees, promises. Not that any player ever wants to be promised something in the recruiting, but just like, hey, coach, do you predict I'm going to be the starter? And I, our most clear answer to him over the last few weeks was like, look, man, we've got six quarterbacks. Three of them aren't getting any type of repetitions with the ones. It's clearly on the wall who's competing and who's not. Right now, you're competing. No promises. And, like I said, I think Shea, in his maturity, always appreciated that communication, that kind of transparency. And so he wanted to give that back to us. And, I've said this just before in my mind, if I can stand up from those meetings, give a guy a hug or a handshake, whatever he's inclined to, try to read the room a little bit, and then walk together down the hall to the compliance officer with a smile and say, man, I just want the very best for you. Here's the process now. Here's our compliance officer, Caitlin, if you haven't met her before, and she'll help you through this process. And man, call me as soon as I can help you out. Coaching's a small world, And I know a lot of guys out there, and this is my cell number. Share it with anybody that you think I can help you with.
Quarterback, this has got to be the toughest part of this, too, because if a defensive back comes to you or a running back and says, hey, am I the starter? You can honestly say, you know, you're not really the starter right now, but if you keep busting it, there's going to be plays designed for you. There's going to be reps opportunities. You can't do that with a quarterback. I think back to one of the big transfer stories in all of college football. You go back to the Alabama situation with Tua and Jalen Hurts. Well, obviously Nick Saban wants to have both of those guys on his roster. If Tua goes down, then he's got one of the other better quarterbacks. But for the player, it's not really fair either, because you have Jalen Hurts, who's clearly a starting caliber guy, but and he's not going to be starting at Alabama. So you can, it all makes sense. That's my favorite part of the transfer portal. But for you guys with quarterbacks, that's tough, because you being honest, saying, hey, you're probably not going to start, and I'm not going to promise you that. There's injuries and things like that. But that's got to be one of the more difficult conversations for you, because in a perfect world, you want to have the best quarterbacks, one through whatever, six, there just in case, because injuries can happen. But you also want to be fair to the player.
Absolutely. The best teams have an established pecking order, right? I looked at South Dakota State last year and all the success they had. 35 seniors. We had four, you know, by comparison.
Yeah.
We've got to get to the point where not just as a football program, but as a university, we're retaining people. We're graduating people. People are proud to be UNC Bears. They're proud to see it all the way through. A big part of that is winning, and a big part of winning falls on my shoulders. But when you have a senior-led group like that, typically you've got a lot of guys that have bought into their role. When you have, just to use South Dakota State for example, there weren't 35 senior starters. So that means there were a bunch of guys, you know. I'm just guessing, right? Like anybody who knows a football roster, I'm guessing there were probably of those 34 seniors, I'm guessing, you know, maybe somewhere around 15 were starters, maybe 20. So you got 14 other guys that are playing a valuable role there. They're veteran guys, they're leadership guys. They're in their final year, they're giving everything they got to have the best experience they can. But they've got a role that they've bought into for that. And we've got to get there. The types of guys that are in the portal, I mean, you could separate them out. If you knew all of their stories, right, you've got the guys that entered the portal because they're not high enough on the depth chart in the spot they're at. And then you've got the guys that are in the portal because the coach kicked them out, right? And obviously we're not going to talk about that on a name basis here ever. You know, I'm going to avoid that question. We would not expose a guy like that, right? And then you got guys, and this is the one I'm actually aspiring to. If you get a life-changing inducement in recruiting, and that's actually illegal, but I'm not putting my head in the sand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know
that they're out there. I know that there's high school coaches working behind the scenes. There are street agents working behind the scenes. If I can help a player develop at UNC to the point where somebody, and it would probably be a Power 5 program, is making them an inducement offer in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's a game changer. If they've got an offer in the tens of thousands of dollars, like from a Group of Five school, that's typically what's coming out for the Group of Five schools, that's not a life changer. In fact, you can end up being stunting your development as a player going to a new program with new schemes and really seriously jeopardizing your opportunity of playing at the next level, where we're not talking about tens of thousands of dollars. We're talking about hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars.
It's got to be another one that's so difficult. And I love that you say that, too, because you say it. I'm not putting my head in the sand. It's happening. It's illegal, but it's happening. How does that not make you want just to turn red in the face and get mad at the same time? Because we're hearing these stories of guys getting messages on their X accounts or Facebook account or whatever, and it's, hey, there's this there for you. And then they're just gone, just like that. But at the same time, you're looking at it going, hey, if it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, you could set yourself up in a decent way. You could really could produce and earn during your college football days. But at the same time, that's got to be frustrating.
Well, there have been a lot of times when I've been frustrated and embarrassed about the coaching profession. I stopped going to the national convention when I saw two guys crash through an upper floor hotel window in a fight, and just a lot of like poor behavior in what I would have, you know, when I first started going to it as a young coach. So what you've got here is you've got thousands of coaches,
yeah,
high school, college coaches from around the country. They all descend on one, you know, convention able city, Orlando or San Antonio. And, you know, it just takes a few guys to embarrass a whole group. But there's just times where I'm walking around the streets or I'm in a restaurant and I'm embarrassed to be a coach because of the behavior of guys. Like it's not always a professional profession, professional minded profession. And I just think the majority of coaches are in it for the right reason. They're doing the right things. But, you know, it got to the point where, you know, I had to really think about if I was brought my wife to the convention, okay, where do we go,
yeah,
where it's appropriate to bring your wife and have a good time and see other people. So I got to the point where I was making appointments to go to dinner kind of away from the downtown convention area with coaches and their wives that I knew in the past. And you know, I'm kind of giving you a circular answer to, I know that I can't change anybody else's behavior in this profession. There are guys that specifically set out to recruit illegally, get a name for it. I'm not going to give you those names, but I know guys who do it illegally. I know guys who have been caught, and they're still in very lucrative positions around the country, and they were specifically hired for that. And it's just not the way we're going to do it. We're not going to get into that, and we're not going to, you know, we're going to be stoics about it. That's going on out there. We're going to find a different way to be successful.
What are those? I know you can't give us names or anything, but what is that process? Because they can't be the one directly to reach out to the— none of this is really legal, but they can't be the one, right? They can't have a message trail. How are they letting it be known to a player? For example, a player on your roster today gets a message. Who's he getting the message from?
So those are from the collectives or the local booster/business owner NIL opportunity.
Wow.
But it's the coach behind the scenes that's, sure, saying, here's the one that you should be interested in offering an NIL deal to. And that's— that part of it is illegal,
sure,
but,
yeah,
nearly impossible to police.
Yeah, how do you police that? Because, I mean, anybody could do it. Even if you're not a booster, it could be somebody like me that just knows a certain coach and knows exactly what the team's interested in, and it could be a vague message of, hey, I know for a fact there's $600,000 waiting for you at this school. You should reach out to them today. I mean, that could happen, right?
Well, it's easy to police in one way, in that just like any, you know, any business dealings in any setting, there are records. People talk, people turn on each other. You can go back and you know, potentially prosecute this type of behavior, but the NCAA is really gun shy right now,
yeah,
right? Because,
sure,
if you're going back and prosecuting this behavior and you really start policing it, okay, are we taking money out of these players' pockets? That, you know, the general consensus right now is, hey, there's a lot of money in college football, especially at the major college level, billions of dollars in television deals. Why are we policing this conversation that a coach may have had that turned into a lucrative opportunity for this player? And I can see that. And I can see why the NCAA is really gun shy about going after anything that they might hear about like this.
It's one of the most fascinating conversations in sports. I think I talk about NIL stuff, I don't know, half a dozen times a week on my regular show. You and I, when we first met for breakfast to talk about this podcast, we were talking about the future of college athletics, not just football, but athletics, about, you know, what's going to happen with NIL, what's going to happen with the transfer portal. Do you get a sense that there will be some aggressive approaches in the next 5 years to try to govern this a bit more, to try to police this?
I think as soon as the public really gets a handle on the guys that aren't getting the money that they were promised, you know, I think the public, when the public perception changed to, wow, look at all the money that's going to coaches, look at all the money that's in college football, look at all the money coming from television to the university coffers, why aren't the players getting a share of this? I think that's when there was pressure, for the NCAA and state legislators to start to say, okay, well, how do we allow some of this? And we have to stop putting up this roadblock. It's actually illegal and un-American to not allow people to benefit from their own name, image, and likeness. And so that was kind of the first step. And now, our profession has muddied it to the point where there are no contracts in place. And so the player's not protected like they would be as a professional athlete. We're paying them as if they're professionals, but they don't always get that money. And then if the coach wants to just kind of ship them out and force them into the transfer portal, the coach gets out of the deal right away. And I just think that right now it's definitely an improvement from the old days where you would leave your duffel bag under the table and as a coach, and inside the duffel bag would be all the inducement. And I've never really been at a school where we would do that. The only Power Five type place that I was at was BYU, and that's just not BYU's way of doing things. And I was proud. I'm proud to be an alum of that place, and proud to have worked there because even though the NIL. BYU is currently at the forefront of that, and we were doing it in a different way, a very transparent way, in a way that elevated the whole roster, not so much individuals.
How difficult is that, to stay true to yourself, too? I mean, we talk about building cultures and football teams and high character and all that stuff. When you're seeing the rest of the world do this, whether it's here at UNC or at BYU, your competition's doing it. You know there's a lot of that. It's not under the table anymore. It's out on social media or whatever. You know it's happening. And a lot of times we see that in sports or just in general when some guy starts to do it and gets away with it and his team's successful, then, hey, I have no choice but to give in, to succumb to that, and I'm going to start doing it. And it's just a domino effect. How difficult is that to stay true to yourself and not do kind of those under-the-table antics?
Very honestly, we don't have the resources at UNC.
Sure, yeah.
But
like at BYU, I mean, knowing your competition is at those levels because there's money there,
right? At BYU, it was more difficult, particularly when we would have fan or administrator interaction who would be saying things like, "We need to be recruiting this guy," and as a coach, you don't want to throw the player under the bus or the other school and say, well, look, they're getting this type of inducement and we're not going to get that because, by the way, I don't want to have recruiting conversations with administrators and fans because I know what I'm doing and you guys don't know what I'm doing and you wouldn't know what you're doing. So it's kind of walking a fine line there between like, hey, I appreciate your support or your fandom, but – you're wading into an area here that you don't understand, and if I enlighten you, I'm kind of putting a player in a bad spot or a player's family in a bad spot.
I don't know how you guys do it. Obviously different challenges, but there could be the positives too. Now with the transfer portal, as you said, guys on the depth chart that maybe they're good enough to go somewhere else and start or whatever. That's the stuff where it makes sense. And name, image, and likeness at its core. You and I've discussed this. That all makes sense. You go to a team, you build up your NIL, your resume, and then you go out and you work with a car wash because they want you to come out and do a celebrity car wash or sign autographs. And I'm the naive one that's like, yeah, that's how it's going to go. Great. Let them earn. Now it's way deeper. It's the reverse of that. It's come here. We'll pay you first. Come here and we'll see what happens. It's not NIL. There are some NIL deals. There's a lot of really good NIL deals. But there's just a lot of, here's some money, come play football for us. And that's the part that's not supposed to be happening.
That's right. Yeah. I'm a believer in the market and that the market would correct. I'd like to see just like in our basic economy, just discussions around protection of individuals.
Sure.
And I think we can make some progress in the protection of these players. I think if we are now to the point where we are paying players through NIL or allowing that, I think there's an opportunity coming where we can actually make it equitable. We can make it contracted. We can have protections in place for the schools and for the players. I know one thing, the offensive lineman that transferred from Alabama this last year to Iowa never suited up for a game, apparently got some NIL money to go to Iowa, and now is getting some NIL money to leave Iowa and go back to Alabama. That type of story, good for that player. He took advantage of his opportunities, and apparently he's not doing anything illegal. But once universities start feeling the brunt of some of that, then maybe the pressure is coming from the right direction to protect both the universities and the players.
I'm amazed at how fast it's gone. You know, even a year ago or 2 years ago, it was like, no, can't even talk to you about the coach. I can't even talk. Now it's collectives are springing up out of nowhere, and we all know that the collectives know the coaches. And the coaches are saying, these are the guys we're kind of thinking. Like, it's not hidden anymore. It's like, these things are happening. It's wild to me, Coach. So thanks for going there again. Well, I'm sure it won't be the last time. We'll be discussing NIL transfer portal stuff throughout the year.
Well, you know from paying attention to the very first moment where I was in the public eye talking about UNC, I'm a player development guy. And the one big golden opportunity for any coach who's a player development guy is the NIL is drawing coaches away from player development.
Yeah,
they're now starting to gain reputations. The internet brought this about a little bit too when recruiting rankings started to be out in the public, and now you've got coaches that are specifically chasing rankings, not their own evaluation. The evaluation of whoever's doing these rankings, and I don't really know who these guys are for the most part. And the guys that I do know, I'm not changing my evaluation because of their evaluation. I don't see that experience there. So, for the coaches that are really stoic about it and say, okay, well, here's what I can control. I can control player development. I think there's a big golden opportunity. That's what we're betting on in UNC.
Well, and I've said this, and complimenting you, of course. Again, the tortoise and the hare story comes to mind. There's so much of that happening. Transfer. Hey, let's go get that guy. There's a number one guy. Let's get him. You're seeing it where they got the guy they wanted. Oh, he doesn't actually fit with this. We saw it with a cornerback in Boulder just yesterday. Top recruit at the cornerback position didn't really produce much. Now he's gone. And that was just a number. It wasn't necessarily, does he fit what we're doing? Where I bring up the tortoise situation, it's, hey, we're not going to sprint and just bust through that finish line, but with no substance, no base or anything. We're going to take our time. We're going to build this foundation up. And then when we do cross that finish line, we've built up a really steady backing for our football program.
There's no way that I can accurately predict scores of our games next year, how many wins we're going to have.
Thanks. That was going to be my next question.
But I can – I don't put that past you. but
you know
it's
coming.
I can predict. I can promise. I can invite the analysis from anybody who's watching. Are we changing from year to year? The things that I believe that as coaches, you get what you emphasize. And if you are listening to coaches or reading their print in the media, and what they're talking about is recruiting and NIL and transfers in and transfers out, I think that's what you'll see in their program. And to me, I don't know whether that's good or bad. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think it can be either, really. I think you can do either really well or really poorly. But I can tell you that if you're coming to our games, if you're watching us, you're going to see a bigger, stronger, faster, tougher football team every single year. We are going to just get better and better and better to the top of the conference. And if you get to the top of the Big Sky, you're at the top of the country.
Wow, and you're getting me excited. Like I said, doing these podcasts just gets me early in March, April, pumped up for football season. And I know there's a long way to go. Coach, the second half of the podcast today, let's talk about technology changes, too, in Division I football. I know that's a big deal that we've had discussions about, maybe not on this one just yet, but headsets, all that stuff. Talk to us about some of those changes that you're adapting to.
You talk about NIL changing quickly and trying to keep up with all the legislation and opportunities. This technology thing is moving much faster than NIL. There was a time just 18 months ago where we wouldn't even say that a coach-to-player communication device would be anywhere in the near future in college football. There's just been so much slammed doors. You know, we were told forever. Coaches have wanted this because you see all the goofy sideline signaling that's necessary. Mm-hmm. Playbooks have expanded. The game has expanded. The complexity of the game has expanded. And so the calls on offense and defense and the situational adjustments are getting more and more complex. And so these signals are getting more and more complex. And the NFL, for years, you don't see those guys signaling because they have coach-to-player communication devices in the helmet. And the initial objection from the NCAA was it's a safety issue. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you can't argue that. That's kind of the trump card in football rules changes. It's a safety issue. Okay, well, we're changing the kickoff. It's a safety issue. Okay, and I mean, the obvious question is, well, how is the NFL doing it? Well, they have these, you know, $100,000 helmets and communication, and they can afford the liability and stuff like that. So all of a sudden, that just flipped. I mean,
it's not a safety issue
anymore. In a major way, and some of its technological advances and those coach to player, set the hardware is getting smaller, and it's obviously not a safety issue at this point, right? Like, you can almost pull it off with the iPad or the iPod. What are they? Earbuds?
Yeah, it is. Earbuds.
Yeah.
I always call it AirPods, and my wife's like, "Why are you 97 years old?"
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way it is.
So I think you could just kind of ham and egg it and pull it off on your own. Right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
At that point, I think maybe the rule changes. But there's two major technological rules advancements this season coming. The first is the coach to player communication that has been approved and adopted by all the FBS, and they are actually going with a group purchase of the product, which I believe is called Green Dot, and it's the exact same product or works in the exact same way that the NFL's does. It'll be shut off 15 seconds before the play clock ends, or when the offense addresses. The football is in an imminent snap position, I think is the way that it's worded. Well, the Green Dot company couldn't guarantee having enough ready for the FCS level by the time the season came around. And so the FCS opted not to use coach-to-player communication as a rule. And so – but now we just were on a conference call last night with the Big Sky – coaches, where we're trying to decide, do we appeal to the NCAA to allow the FCS schools or the Big Sky Conference to adopt the technology? Because there's more technology than just Green Dot. Like I said, there's a lot of companies that can pull this off. So, you know, the objection I had was, look, if it's not allowable in the playoffs, I don't want my team getting used to it.
Sure,
and
yeah.
We're losing our proficiency at signaling, and then all of a sudden we have to change. So to me, it's all of FCS or none, or
that makes perfect
whoever
sense.
Can afford it does it, and we would find a way to afford it. If I had to pay for it out of my pocket, we're not going to put our team at a disadvantage. We're already going to be at a disadvantage if it's not approved for FCS when we go play Colorado State this year. They're going to be using
Absolutely.
Headsets. There's no way we could get proficient in a week at that. You know, without practicing it all the time. And if we're practicing it all the time but can't use it in our other 11 games, obviously that's foolhardy. So there's the coach-to-player change. And then if you've ever watched an NFL game over the years, you see them looking at Polaroids on the sideline. And mm-hmm. that changed about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, that changed to sideline tablets. But they're still looking at still shots or coaching shots of the all 22 or the tight shot. And that is now legal for all of football at all college football levels. And so we're going to have tablets on the sideline. We're going to have coaches being able to coach with technology on the sideline.
Couple of questions, follow up for you. What do you think is going to come from you? Obviously, conversation last night with the Big Sky Conference. When do you think you'll know whether it's going to be, hey, it's all or nothing with the FCS, or we're going to let each team in the FCS just figure out if they can make it happen, they can do it. When do you think you'll know?
I felt like we knew last night that it was unlikely that the FCS would say, yes, we are going to allow this in the playoffs. I think there are probably 3 to 4 conferences In the FCS of the, and I think there are like 11 or 12 conferences, probably only three or four that are really going to push for that technology, that football is big enough and has big enough budgets. And I was able to speak and say, look, as the representative here of the lowest budget in the conference, we want it unequivocally. Yeah. If we can pull it off, we want it. We will find a way. And so I hope there are more FCS schools and more conferences that are going to jump on board. But right now it seems unlikely.
That it would happen at least next season.
Yeah, I think – so the, you know, when we play against Colorado State, we can do it because it's legal in that game. But it's, you know, again, for us, the idea of pulling that off with any proficiency or effectiveness in one game, I think is – I don't think that's a smart choice.
You know, ballpark, Coach, how much – and I was actually talking about this the other day. How much does that cost? Because you're talking headsets or, in helmet communication for probably most of the quarterbacks, right? And then linebackers, maybe a safety. How does that work? And what's a ballpark as far as cost goes?
Yeah, there's a little bit of variation based on how many helmets you would actually want to put it into. Obviously, you need your top two or three quarterbacks to have that technology. Some of the technology can be transferred in and out of helmets. And so if you got in a situation where you had your equipment guy that could make some changes. But I think the major college schools are like in the $150,000 to $200,000 range where for the software and the hardware. And they're using it for multiple helmets on each side of the ball, and they're able to turn on the number of allowable communication devices, which is, I think, two on the field at a time, and looking to maybe put 8 to 10 in there so that any of those 8 to 10 could be the guys that are using it. And then I think the group of five schools are kind of zeroing in on more of a $50,000 to $60,000 product. And then we've been looking at the Big Sky level or the FCS level. There's a more of a $12,000 product that I would consider looking a little bit more like the like the AirBuds, the AirPods type of device. It's not. I mean, it's not floating like that. It's not going to fall out of the guy's ears. It's more connected to the helmet, but it is similar. In technology,
it's not going to be like a cell phone underneath the helmet or anything like that.
No, it's not. Maybe not as good as what the NFL is using, but certainly not something that we just invented here over at Butler Hancock.
We had a funny story. Just a quick story on the radio side of things. We were doing years ago when I was just breaking in. We're doing a high school football game. We're broadcasting the game. Our headsets, everything, nothing's working. So we end up just saying, all right, we're going to do it on our phone. So we both just call into the station, but we still wanted to look professional, Coach. So we just stuck the phone underneath our earpiece like this and held the phone to our mouth. So if people were looking, they're like, look at those guys. They're professional. But really, we're just sitting here on the cell phone broadcasting a game. You do what you got to do to make it work.
Absolutely. You know, one of the greatest stories, the guys that came through SUU with me when we were building that thing, in the third year, we won the first championship in school history. We're at UC Davis. UC Davis and SUU were in the same conference at that time. Still are, but we were in the Great West at that time, and since both have joined the Big Sky, and then SUU left. Side note. But but we're at UC Davis. We're in a tight game, championship on the line, and our headsets go down. Mm. And so we were then at the point where the offensive coordinator was up in the box signaling to the sideline, and then the sideline guys were signaling to the guys on the field. And the defensive coordinator came down and just signaled from the sideline, you know, and can see the game better from there. But offensive coordinators usually want to be up in that box. And we ended up winning the game. But it was just kind of a just made the story richer, made that night richer to actually come through, hoist a trophy, and not have any headsets during the game.
Wow. Well, you can never underestimate the power of communication and knowing each other, knowing that you can do different signals. I mean, that's powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's tough. It's what I talk about here. It's toughness, because our players knew what was going on too. And then I was under the impression that if your headsets went down, I think this is like an antiquated rule. If your headsets go down and you notify the officials, then the other team has to take their headsets off too. Well, I was told no. That's not the rule. And so, you know, our players like heard all this conversation. They saw what was going on, and they still rose to the occasion, beat a very good UC Davis team, and we were able to have a championship.
Well, obviously, the championship is amazing on its own. But then when you add that story to it, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The tablet side, can you give us a ballpark like costs on that kind of thing? And how many tablets are we talking?
I think the allowable number is 18.
18, okay.
Even the NFL teams don't generally use 18. They have 18 in their bank on the sideline. I might be confusing some numbers, but let's say the NFL is around 18, and I think that's what college football is leaning towards, around 18. And I think in the NFL, there are like player ones, and the players can go over and look at any time, right? And I think we would kind of have the same thing, but we don't want to have 18, available if only like 11 are being utilized. And so I think we're just trying to find that right number, the correct number for us. We want to coach from it. We want to allow the players to have some access to it. But I think we could probably get by with more like 10. I'm told from guys in the NFL that they actually use more like 8 to 10, maybe 12.
Okay. All right. That's great. That's interesting, too, to go there. And, keep us updated. If there is any news, maybe we'll follow up on the whole headset thing. Sounds like it's not likely this year for the FCS, but we'll see. And like you said about the CSU note, no plans to even go there, right? You would just stay with your traditional form of communication to the players.
Right, yeah. I mean, we can list out all the disadvantages or advantages that CSU has in that game when we match up with them, from scholarships to resources to indoor practice facilities. Boom, 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 boom. You can make a long list. And that'll just be one more thing that's an advantage for them, not for us. But in the end, it's going to come down to blocking and tackling more than it is any coach's plan or communication device.
I'm excited for that game. I'm excited for that opportunity for you guys, too. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's always a special opportunity for an FCS player to line up against an FBS opponent. And, let's be very honest. I think a lot of our guys grew up potentially being Colorado or Colorado State fans and having that be, their primary choice. And in the end, I think we all in life find our path and what our best opportunities are, and then we pour 100% into that. And now our guys are UNC fans, right? And that's fine, but that's just the reality. Is the opportunity to play on that stage? It's a really big deal for our players.
Yeah, well, like I said, these shows get me excited for the fall. No question about it, Coach. Let's talk about adding officials to last week's scrimmage. There's something about it when you see those guys in stripes out there. It does bring that official feel to everything.
Yeah. I've talked to you about confidence and poise and that being a major goal for us this year. And, sometimes in practice when the officials aren't around, there's a tendency to lose some confidence and poise. The defensive line thinks the offensive line is holding and the wide receivers think the defensive backs are holding. And then when we get officials there, it changes, and the guys are they're mature and experienced football players, and so they know that at that point you let the officials do their job, and it was nice to have those guys there. They bring a little more of a game-like environment. And our receivers found out that our defensive backs are not, holding every play. And our defensive line found out that our offensive line is not holding every play. So it's really good to have those guys. Appreciate their efforts.
It's like bringing a ref into a, a pickup basketball game where you're supposed to call your own fouls and nobody does, or they call phantom fouls. And then the ref's there. Suddenly the game's completely different.
It is, yeah. These guys are professionals. We actually have to it's a good deal that we don't pay them money that they make a living off of, but basically pay their travel expenses. They're guys typically from all over the state of Colorado. They are actively currently employed, working. The Big Sky Officials Association, or they work the RMAC leagues. They're regular, experienced college football officials.
Now, does everybody – I've always wondered this. Is that just an option to do that? Does everybody – do you have to do that, or is it just an option?
It's just an option. I know that at a bigger school where money's not an issue, you might bring them in every practice.
Every day.
Yeah, and at some of the bigger schools, quite honestly – like at BYU, we had a line of officials that just wanted to work it. They wanted to be part of that environment, and they wanted to get that experience. They're professionals, and BYU's the big show in that area. That's not necessarily the case here. We've got our Big Sky officials that live in this area, and they want to take care of us and do a good job and come over and get their practice reps in. But it's not easy to put together a 7-man crew here. for 15 straight practices. So we're typically looking at more like 3 to 5 of our most scrimmage-like practices.
Coach, kind of the last point I want to get into with you in our notes and in our exchange last night, you want to talk about the concept of giving 51%.
Right, yeah. I think the more popular way to talk about percentages of effort and commitment in sports is 110%, right? You hear that all the time, and we all kind of, okay, well, what exactly does that
mean? You know what that means.
How does the math add up on that? But we all know what it means, right? You play with everything you've got. And I've been talking to our team this past week about the way our kind of pyramid of success is built, and being smarter, tougher, and better conditioned. And I think right in the center of that thing is kind of like the zone, you know, where when you have all this going for you and you've built a strong foundation of commitment and you become actually smarter and tougher and better conditioned and you're playing with poise and confidence, a real reason is somewhere along the line you decided to give more to this program than you want back. And that's a difficult concept. Mm. But many years ago, had a speaker come and speak to our team. This was before I was at UNC. And that speaker was a local businessman who had built kind of a business up from the ground, Hunting Magazine. And I just brought him in to talk to the players about, you know, life. And he was the first one to introduce that concept to me. He may have got it from somebody else, but he said, in all my business dealings, I strive to set the contract up so it's 51-49. I want to give my partner 51%. I want to take 49. If it's a good enough deal to go into business with, then it's a good enough deal for me to give 1% extra. And it struck me in that moment, and it has always stayed with me because I can see it with players. I think very well intended, when we're all in high school, we're thinking about this college opportunity and a scholarship and all that. You want to play college football, but you also want the scholarship. And you also want the degree. And even parents and uncles and coaches, they're telling you, you go get what you can out of that school. And that's all valid. I don't want to take anything away from that advice or that mindset. But I just think when we just flip that just a little bit, that's an indication that you're giving trust. Instead of making the coaches and the program earn trust to the point where you're guarded and you're always making sure you get a little more out of the deal, a little more from UNC than you would give, for example, I think that stunts the growth of the players. And so it's sometimes a difficult concept for guys to get over. But I believe as coaches, you get what you emphasize. And I've really been trying to emphasize that, you know, if you give 51, maybe you get 51, maybe you get 60, maybe this idea of 100%, 110% is attainable. Maybe you can get more when you give more, because I see guys holding themselves back when they just don't give it everything they've got.
I'm going to use that now. And I love it too, because if you're given a little extra, you're helping grow the program too. Whatever your business is or whatever, you're growing your surroundings. So then there's going to be that 51% of whatever, or that 49% of whatever is going to be 49% of a larger pot if you're all doing that and you're all working to grow together.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the buy-in. And that's where I think if you're trying to make it 50-50, or as a player, or you're waiting for indications that you're getting more than you're giving. If that's your goal, then I just think that you're never going to get what you want out of this thing. And so you're right. I think when we give 51%, we just grow the whole pot, and we become leaders for people around us. We don't wait to see if our investment is giving us back more than we put into it. We just keep investing because we've already decided that we're going to give more.
I love that concept. I think, again, you can use that for pretty much everything. Coach, all right, it's Wednesday. It is the 17th day of April. Can you outline the next 5 to 10 days or so, what to expect from UNC football?
Sure. Big scrimmage coming up this Saturday. We've got a physical practice coming up Thursday, and then a scrimmage coming where we just, you know, we call it roll the ball out. In other words, like, we're not doing a lot of teaching and individual work that day, not doing a lot of structured drill work. We are going to play 11-on-11 football to the ground. And that'll happen the next two Saturdays. This Saturday, scrimmage format, and then the following Saturday will be the spring game, which we're leaning towards right now, not actually being a game. But we do want to get excited about that. We understand that there'll be, you know, parents and local fans that would want to come out and support that in person. And so we want to make sure to give a lot of effort and play at a high level, perform at a high level for that. But yeah, after that, we're into finals week. The players go into a discretionary period of training, so all of the resources are available to them here. But for the most part, they're head back to their homes. They're going on their vacations, and they're getting away from campus for about a 4-week period.
So a couple of tough weeks coming up, and then a little bit of a kind of a break, at least from each other for a moment. Maybe, and that's good, probably to get away from each other for a little bit, because you're going to be around each other so much as we progress through the year.
Yeah, there's some recovery that's necessary. I think active recovery, most of these guys know that that's the way to do it. When we come back on May 26th, there are going to be some pretty rigorous physical testing. We'll know who took advantage of the month of May to recover and strengthen, and those who just kind of, you know, don't have good habits.
Is that a stressful thing for you? I always joke about this, whether I'm talking college sports or pro sports. Whenever the team's breaking apart and, you know, the coaches aren't in full control at that point, I always joke and say, man, I bet coaches just wish they could put a dome over everything so that the guys can't get too far out. They're not doing anything crazy. How hard is that not to keep that on your mind, wondering how are these guys doing? Maybe there's a certain guy that was having some struggles or whatever. How are these guys doing? How stressful is that for you, Coach?
You bring up a really interesting question, because I'm constantly introspective about, I know my personality is to push, I know my job is to push, but I'm also a big believer in personal freedom of choice. And so I'm constantly juxtaposing those two ideas, you know, and they oftentimes compete against each other. So I don't it's really difficult when you let the players go. I mean, obviously, they're on their own to train. They're on their own to be committed. But we all represent each other, right? Like one community disservice act reflects poorly on all of us.
And yeah, so sure
it
does.
It really is a stressful time, because I just don't have the interaction with these players that I would want. Our coaches don't have the interaction. But in the end, it's a really important part of their development and a really important part of our evaluation when they come back, because we can tell. We can really tell who's given their all to this on a year-round basis.
Coach, we covered a lot of bases in this one today. This was very interesting. I always love picking your brain on the NIL stuff, the transfer portal stuff. I appreciate you going there with the Shea Kuykendall story, too. I think that is really refreshing for people to hear that, because, again, you see it on social media, you wonder what's happening. A lot of times coaches aren't going to come on and go specifically right after that. But the beauty of the schedule of the podcast was we were going to talk about it the very next day.
I'm just amazed and a little bit proud, because I have no podcast training, and there's a part of me that always thinks that maybe like this is all fake and you're not actually publishing it. So usually within a day or two of recording these, I'll just pull it up on the website. Yeah. And, oh man, it's actually
there. It is.
It's real. He's not just like shining me on here. Yeah. He actually is putting this out.
Yeah, these microphones are plugged in and everything, Coach. I was just trying to get you in here. It's funny, and I appreciate this. I'm getting so many compliments. On the podcast, and I'm not trying to be the humble guy, but this is all you. I mean, this is, you really did originate this idea of doing this podcast, and your willingness to do it without you being here. This is just me spouting off things I think are happening. So it's truly an honor to do this with you. Some guy had tweeted me last week and said, man, this could be made into a book, an audio book or something, or a book on tape, I think is what you and I said a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think Blake Olson, he was on my program yesterday, and he mentioned, he said, hey, yeah, I don't care if you're a UNC fan a college football fan. It's very informative, and that is because you're bringing all this information to us. So, Coach, again, I just thank you for doing it. We're able to do this an hour every single week, so the honor is on my side here. I'm absolutely honored and thrilled to do this, because picking a D1 coach's brain is a dream come true.
I have a full expectation that we're going to succeed at UNC, and this has become part of my process. On a weekly basis, really, I probably think about it on a daily basis. And there are thousands of things I think about process-oriented on a daily basis in running a football program. But the reflection of what the previous week has looked like has become part of my process. And in part, I need to reflect so that I can prepare for this. You know, I'm definitely not going about running the program in a way that can get the podcast going. You know, the podcast is not driving the football program, but the reflection, I think, is allowing me to be just more conscientious about where we've been and where we're going. And I'm really excited to just have that kind of established record.
Well, and everybody I talk to about you, Coach, I'm like, this guy, and I'm learning from experience, everything you do, you're going to go all out. You're going to go all out to make it happen. You know, I always look forward to that text that I get that says, hey, here's kind of what I'm cooking on. Here's some ideas. Let's break into it. And that's what I love about it. And I'm very appreciative. And there are a lot of listeners. There are a lot of people that are getting excited about this podcast. So it's gone way better than we could have, on our side, could have hoped. And it's given us great proof of concept as far as how these things can go. So you just keep up the good work. And we're going to see you in here bright and early next Wednesday.
I'm all in. Kind of shocked that we're still doing it, but I'm all in.
Episode 11, and it's Football 52, so the math there. I mean, we got quite a few of these to go, so I'm looking forward to it. Coach, always appreciate you. We'll let you get after it. I know we got some workouts coming up this morning, so we'll let you bust out of here.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, Coach.